From the creators of Relevant Magazine, this is the Relevant Podcast.
It's Friday, August 16th, 2019, and it's the Relevant Podcast. I'm your host, Cameron Strang, and here with me in our Orlando studios, because my brother is late on the ones and twos, Clark Flippo. Hey, man.
Hello, illustrious other.
Yeah.
Coming out of the gates with the shades.
And I like how Clark's just leaning into it today, man. Clark, own this opportunity, hey, okay?
I think, I think Clark knows exactly where Chandler's body is. I think he's slowly moving into it. This is part of the long con.
Chandler's phone went to voicemail.
He's going to be pretty late today.
All we're saying is Chandler's phone's just going to voicemail, so...
Yeah.
Who knows? On the Skype line from Loverland, Virginia, Jesse Carey.
Hello, hello.
From Nashville, Tennessee, Tyler Huckabee.
Howdy, folks.
And just down the street there in Nashville, author, speaker, podcaster, cowgirl extraordinaire, Annie F. Downs.
Good morning, gents. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. It's going to be a weird one today, folks. I'll just tell
what's
you
your
guys.
Deal?
I'll just tell you right now, I'm very tired. Okay.
Uh-oh.
So last night, it's deadline week.
That's
very stressful week. Last night, made the mistake of arguing with people on Twitter.
Okay? I saw that.
Oh, I missed it.
I'm opening it right now.
Okay, little behind the scenes. I, this morning, was gathering content for this very show. And I get up early on morning, so we do the Friday show. I always like to, you know, there's a lot of content we got to prep.
Yeah.
And I'm looking through Twitter and looking through feedback, and I see some tweets, and then I'm like, when were these sent? And I saw it was, because this was like, I don't know, this was probably like 7 a.m. And it said like 3 hours ago. And I'm like, oh no.
Okay, so, and then I have to get up early because I take my son to school. And I had a haircut this morning. All right.
Were you doing it from your Cameron account or from Relevant?
Both and. Okay.
Oh, Cameron.
Oh, yeah.
Someone needs to take away that password.
I saw all of them.
Cameron was in it, in the weeds, and then Relevant had his back. I'm just saying.
Well, I'll say this too. There's a couple threads where it was like, this tweet's unavailable. And I'm like, is that unavailable tweet us or them? Like, oh no, what happened here? What happened? When are the screenshots going to start popping up?
All morning, I've been in the fog because I'm so tired and had so much to do so early. I just, like, as we're walking in to record right now, I'm a little distracted because I got a call from my son's school that I didn't send any lunch with him. And so I'm like, I gotta get food delivered for my kid. Like I am not all there. So this, and this is a Friday.
Can you give me the, like, I don't need the play by play, but can you give me the general, what was the substance of the debate? What was the headline?
I mean, at first it was Relevant is token as far as gender equality.
Hold on, let me set a little more context. At like 9 or 9:30 last night, I sent out a tweet that I do like once a week when I know we weren't doing the segment. Hey, send us your Ask the Cast questions. And I think that's what sparked it.
Yeah.
I think people were sending us questions and then things took a turn.
Yeah. And then it's like, okay. So we're talking about women being represented, strong, powerful women having a voice in our platform. Well, what about? And then somebody else gets going about how Relevant's lukewarm Christianity, because we were given so much play this week to the Hillsong guy who like was questioning his faith, but we weren't like calling him out and whatever. And so, cause we're just lukewarm, I'm taking them to task. And then somebody starts asking me about like, personal things, and I took them to task.
What? Wait, where's that one? I'm looking for that one. Where's that one?
That's the tweet is unavailable this morning. That's Cameron at the barber shop going, meh, probably should pull that one back.
Well, I don't think anybody would accuse Relevant of being, lukewarm. If they heard the fiery voicemail I left on the Hillsong United, I called, gave him a piece of my mind. I can't rightly say it on the air. It had a lot of harsh language in it, but I don't regret it. I don't regret a single word.
I'll say this. Yeah, we got dragged into a bit of a controversy. We're going to cover it. I'll say this. It's number one on the hot list this week, how we were dragged into this controversy. But people can throw all the accusations they want because it's print week, usually a week where a lot of our focus, and there's a lot of other stuff going on behind the scenes. Like, it was a big week just internally for some developments in the future where our focus is being pulled in a lot of different directions. And sometimes the website is lower on the priority list during a time where we're really hustling to get stuff out the door. We had we might have had the biggest week of the year. So thanks to the controversy, a lot of people were coming to our site this week. And yeah, we'll take it. Yeah.
They're coming to our site and experiencing lukewarm, compromised Christianity. That's apparently the consensus on Twitter last night. And at 1 a.m, I was having none of it. I'll just tell you that.
Yeah, you were having none of it.
Yeah.
Well, if lukewarm Christianity gets clicks, then that is what we will. That's what
we're going to say specific things, because I do have one. I do have one specific thing I'm offended about from that Twitter conversation. Or are we just going to let it?
Oh,
be
my word.
Generic.
Let me say this, and then I want your take.
I took umbrage with. This is two different conversations. She was taking umbrage because she got literally categorized or something. Okay.
Let me just say this. Lukewarm is so hot right now. Annie, what's your beef?
My bigger beef is one of the tweeters.
I like it.
My grandmother. Let's go with it. A woman on Twitter said that the reason Shauna and Joy were on the show was because they had famous dads. And I would just like to say Shauna and Joy are their own women, and they get to be on platforms and write books that have nothing to do with who their fathers are. It's because of who they are. So that, I don't care how that girl categorized me. I am bothered that she would think that Shauna and Joy are who they are because of their fathers. Get out of here.
There's only one person on this podcast who's here because of his father, and that is Mike Huckabee's son, Tyler Huckabee.
And I hope I'm here because of Tom Downs. He's the best guy I know. I wish I got this because of Tom Downs. Man, that's the only thing that lit me up for just a second there, because Shauna and Joy are quite incredible women.
I know.
Happened to be raised by good parents, but incredible women on their own.
I was shocked and bothered, and I have this side of me, and I can't read the comments ever. No. I can't allow
can't
myself, because I have this justice side of right and wrong, and if somebody's going after somebody like is indefensible, I will let them know and I will put them in their place, and I can't do that. I can't. I get too riled up, and so. Yeah. Anyway, and then next thing you know,
it's a good thing I was snoozing because I'd have gotten riled up right next to you.
Next thing you know, my son doesn't have any lunch today. So, I mean,
thanks, Twitter.
Gosh. Hope you guys are all happy with yourselves. Way to go. Now a little child's going hungry because you couldn't leave Twitter alone.
Now a little boy.
Congratulations. You've received your reward in full.
Now, instead of a brown bag with a homemade sandwich, Cohen's going to be eating Shake Shack from Uber Eats today.
I'm so tired.
What time did you end up going to bed? Because did you have to like rile yourself down after that?
Yeah. And I was finishing. I don't know why. I've just been in like binge entire series kind of mode this whole summer. Yeah. So like I'm taking on the entire Sopranos. I'm taking on the entire, and I'm just going all the way through, you know, and these are shows I've already seen. Why?
I mean, it's your Enneagram 7-ness, right? Don't you say, or you say you're an 8 with a 7 wing now?
Yeah.
Yeah. We like to binge things when we don't want to feel pain.
Oh, sure. It's been a horrible year. I know that.
So,
literally in every way.
That may play into it.
Yeah. No, I know.
You've had quite a summer.
Yeah. The whole last 6 months has been, and on every front, like every front, professional, personal, everything has been incredibly hard. So, hey, The Sopranos, let's turn that on.
Can I ask you a serious question?
Yeah.
When things are hard for 6 months solid, what happens between you and God?
I think it's, I distract myself from everything, you know what I mean? And it's like, it's the numbing, you know, if I could just turn my brain, my heart, everything just kind of off, watch The Sopranos for 6 hours, you know what I mean? I think everything, relationships with people and God and all of it falls into that trap, right? I mean, like, I'm just kind of like isolating my mind, you know?
Yeah. Me too. My counselor and I had this really hard conversation last week, and she was like, sounds like something you and the Lord need to talk about. And I was like, boy, it has been hard to wake up for my quiet time this week.
I think I'm going to go on Instagram.
And I'll be on Instagram for the next 6 hours.
Some of my fears and doubts, and let's see how Christians react to it.
I actually have. Oh, that's funny. Good foreshadowing for Marty. I found myself like, but the withdrawing thing, I haven't been on social media much either. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's not because like, I don't know. It's just, I don't feel like posting anything. And then I'm not a scroller. I'm like, I'm not a person who just mindlessly inhales social media. Like I'll engage it. I'll like post something and engage people and whatever. But I just haven't had the appetite for it. I don't know. So anyway, I was binging shows till late and a finale wrapped up around midnight or whatever. And by the way, I can't condone the show, big asterisk, but I watched the new season of Orange is the New Black, you know, which is like the series finale. Yeah. I was just curious after seven seasons how they were going to kind of like wrap all the storylines. They ended the show in a way I've never seen. They ended the show with...
are you about to spoil it for people who care?
I'm not. There is a plot line where a bad thing happened and a outgrowth of it, like somebody, you know, died, and an outgrowth of it was awareness of the circumstances that led to it. And on the show, somebody started like a foundation, like it kind of like rallied activism around this thing. And at the end of the series, the screen goes black and that fictional foundation comes up on the screen with a real donation link to help with social justice or, you know, like kind of prison reform and helping ex-cons get on their feet so they can break this cycle of kind of being in and out of the system and like help them with microloans and education and different things. And like this fictional thing, the show creators made real and was able to donate to it. It was amazing. Yeah, I was really glad that they did that they took this, you know, fictionalized drama and directly connected it to real organizations.
Or was it, because originally, like part of it was based on a real, Anna, I can't think of her name now, but on her actual experience, right?
Piper, so did she Piper somebody. Yeah.
Did she start a foundation or did the show?
No. The foundation name at the end was named after one of the fictional characters in the show who was killed. And so in the show, the other inmates like created a foundation in her honor. And then they actually made it a real thing. And I went on their GoFundMe and like the show creators are behind it and they're giving to these eight organizations. And it was a really amazing thing.
Wow.
And I ended up donating. So,
Oh my gosh.
That's how they get you.
We got to get your after midnight behavior under control.
I ended up donating $700,000.
Yeah, that's it.
And then I didn't have a show on. So I got on I was on my phone donating and I flipped over to the Twitter to see what's going on. Go.
That's where it went.
That's where it went sideways.
You went right into the ditch.
We need to draw some new boundaries. For ourselves. We need some nighttime boundaries, it sounds like.
Oh, man. All right. Well, we have a great show in store for you today. Coming up later, John Foreman joins us. He wrote an op-ed for us this week at Relevant about the gun violence epidemic. And he's going to come on the show today and talk to us about this issue, which he's passionate about. So look forward to that. All right, well, let's take a break and stay tuned. When we come back, it'll be the hot list. Listening to Brother Sundance featuring Ella Ba. The song is Monsters. At the beginning of the podcast, you heard Becca Vanderbeck, Matt Heath, and Noel Goff with Summertime. Okay, it's time for...
It's the hot list. The hot list. It's sizzling.
All right, coming in at number five this week on the hot list. This week, Jay-Z's Roc Nation formed a controversial social justice partnership with the NFL. So the goal of the multi-year partnership is to enhance live game experiences and amplify the league's social justice efforts. So he'll be helping with Super Bowl halftime and other music things, entertainment and things with the league, and then also social justice, right? So Jay-Z said in a statement, with its global reach, the NFL has the platform and opportunity to inspire change across the country. Roc Nation's shown that entertainment and enacting change are not mutually exclusive ideas. Instead, we unify them. This partnership is an opportunity to strengthen the fabric of communities across America. So it's an odd partnership because Jay-Z's been critical of the NFL in the past, famously turning down the Super Bowl halftime show. He also wore a Colin Kaepernick jersey during a 2017 appearance on SNL. And ever since Colin Kaepernick began kneeling during the national anthem before games to protest racial injustice and police brutality, the NFL's stand on social justice issues has been criticized. Kaepernick and fellow player Eric Reed settled a collusion case, reportedly for tens of millions of dollars, after they remained unsigned following their participation in the demonstrations. Eric Reed later signed a new contract with a new team, but Colin Kaepernick remains unsigned. Following the announcement, Eric Reed took to Twitter questioning the new partnership. In response to Jay-Z saying the deal would, quote, help millions and millions, retweeted, "It looks like your goal was to make millions and millions of dollars by assisting the NFL in burying Colin's career."
Wow.
So, ouch. Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah.
It does seem a little.
This is a bad look across the board.
Yeah. I mean, there were pictures of Jay-Z like laughing and sitting on a couch next to Roger Goodell, who, if for people that don't follow football, is the commissioner of the NFL and has been probably the most criticized and controversial major sports commissioner in America, particularly to his response to the whole Kaepernick situation. So to see those two, like I said, kind of sitting on a couch together, kind of laughing, and it was a weird look for both parties. I felt I mean
you can't help but feel like Jay-Z takes a stand, and then if there's enough money involved, we can look the other way, and all of a sudden now
you think that's it,
there's good people on both sides,
seems like. Yeah. I read there was a really good editorial in the New York Daily News written by Bradford Davis that said that that Jay-Z was helping the NFL provide suppressing fire for criticism, which is strong words, but what other way could you look at this? That's what it looks like.
Yeah.
Yeah. And two, Eric Reed is someone who, you know, like Colin Kaepernick, he doesn't do interviews. He doesn't, isn't vocal about the issues. His thing is a silent protest, a silent, peaceful protest. But Eric Reed, you know, he is very vocal, and he's a Christian, and he's a guy who says that he's doing this because of his faith. His faith compels him to risk his career to speak out against what he sees as, you know, widespread injustice. And so for Eric Reed to come out and, you know, so vocally express his skepticism, I think is pretty powerful and pretty telling.
And I don't want to let the good be the enemy of the perfect here or anything like that. Obviously the NFL needs a lot of help, and I can see a version of this in which this probably seemed like a good idea at the time, but man, I just feel like this should have been thought through so much better. And with the NFL in such a sorry state with multiple issues that it's dealing with right now, from how they dealt with the Kaepernick situation to obviously all the information coming out about the brain trauma that these
brain
guys
trauma,
are.
But also domestic violence.
Yeah. I mean, there's violence, so many players. Situation.
It's a disaster. And this just feels like a really cheap and easy win for them, where there's much more substantive things that are needed. And Jay-Z has been such a good fight for, he's been such a good ally in that. So it's weird to see this shift, and it's kind of disappointing.
Well, Jay-Z only got the opportunity because he has a famous dad, and it's all just Mr. about Carter. Nepotism. And
right.
A lot of people know Mr. Z.
listen, Cameron, don't stir me up again. I'm
only on a few hours sleep.
Don't do it. Y'all stir me up, and then I get in trouble later. Just don't do it. I said my piece.
All right.
Joy and Shauna are very accomplished women. See?
All right, coming in number four on the hot list, we got our first look at Terrence Malick's new religious war drama called A Hidden Life. So here's the official synopsis from Fox Searchlight. A Hidden Life is the story of an unsung hero, Franz Jagerstatter, who refused to fight for the Nazis. I think I got it right.
I think you did.
That was good.
There's a lot of dots over
there's a
A's
lot of dots.
There.
Yeah, there's a lot of Well, he refused to fight for the Nazis in World War II. When the Austrian peasant farmer is faced with the threat of execution for treason, it's his unwavering faith and his love for his wife, Fanny, and children that keeps his spirit alive. The movie received rave reviews when it debuted at the Cannes Film Festival this year, and it's been called one of Malick's finest. Here's a clip.
I can't swear loyalty to Hitler. I can't.
Do you think your defiance will change the course of things?
If God gives us free will, we're responsible for what we do, what we fail to do.
But yeah, as you can hear from that clip we just played, faith is a huge part of this film. I mean, these characters, you know, from the reviews that I've read from people who saw it at Cannes and, you know, even just, you know, from the clips and learning the real story, you know, God was the central motivating factor in his objection to what the Nazis were doing in World War II. And even though it potentially cost this person his life and family, it was literally his unwavering kind of Christian faith that compelled him to risk everything and go to prison. And, you know, it's not just a story of political persecution. In this case, it's a story of religious persecution. And for someone like Terrence Malick to tackle this story in a way that, you know, only Terrence Malick can in the style and prestige that he brings to projects, I think is pretty cool. Tyler, what are your thoughts, man?
Well, I'm curious to hear you talking about it with a sounds like a relatively upbeat to hear your advanced review, because in the past on this very podcast, Jesse, you and I have fought tooth and nail, got back
tooth
and forth over
and
Terrence Malick movies, because I like Terrence Malick.
You
as
two
a filmmaker.
Have had Twitter esque.
Yeah, because
levels of
it's
argument.
Been late night. It's had the flavor of a late night Twitter battle.
I will say this. The plotless Terrence Malick movies that are, you know, intercut with montages of people hanging sheets on fancy, you know, laundry lines and you know, people running their hands through the top of the grass and hay in a undercut, you know, overgrown field.
Are you
field.
Describing a country music?
No, this
video?
Is every Terrence, and there's like swelling music for like those. I'm like, okay, this is boring. This is a war movie. This one looks like, okay, there's something happens in this one.
Jesse,
this is a good move for Terrence Malick. Let's dabble with plot.
I don't want to throw any cold water on your fire here, Jesse, but I have not seen this movie. But if I know anything about Terrence Malick, you're going to get a lot of, I keep that same energy going into this
okay.
movie.
All right. Well, I'm going to end it on this.
Keep
Tyler,
that same energy.
You
keep
and
it
I
up,
both,
brother.
You and I have both seen Terrence Malick's Tree of Life, the acclaimed film.
Yeah.
Okay.
A couple of times.
Give me a one sentence synopsis of the plot of that film.
You don't want me to do, you don't really want me to do this, even though I can.
Plot.
Even though I can.
I like when y'all do this.
No, it's like,
I'm not gonna
what is this movie going to start?
I'm not going to fall into this trap. I'm not going to. You can't. I wasn't born
no
yesterday, Jesse Carey.
All right. Coming in number three this week. It's getting good, folks. The Fellowship Foundation has released a statement in response to the Netflix series The Family.
Oh, I love this.
Oh, this is all the conversation in my church right now. Everyone is talking about
it.
Love it.
Tooth and nail. Oh, this is the drama I live for. Oh, just let me stick a straw in this one and slurp it up.
Coming down the stretch, there's two we have three remaining. Two of the ones remaining are really hot on the hot list. They don't get hotter than two of the ones we get coming.
So the new series, The Family on Netflix, looks at the roots and influence of the group that hosts the National Prayer Breakfast, an annual gathering that every president has attended since the 50s. The gathering drew national attention in recent years when a woman named Maria Butina, who attended the National Prayer Breakfast, to, quote, establish a back channel of communication, according to investigators, pled guilty to conspiring to act as a foreign agent. In a statement, before I read the rest of this, did you see that she was in the news yesterday because she was dating the CEO of Overstock.com Overstock.com released a statement about her? It's crazy.
What?
Yeah.
Because she was dating the CEO?
Yeah, so apparently
living a stupid time.
Over the last like 3 years, like they met at a conservative gathering that he was speaking at called Freedom Fest, and they struck up a romantic relationship over a few years, and she was she was like working her way through the conservative organizations trying to get like communication and back channel communication for Russia. It's really bizarre.
But ultimately, that's been one of the criticisms of the National Prayer Breakfast is that it allows people like someone who pled guilty to being a foreign agent for the Russian government to be in the same room and potentially have access. And in her case, unfettered access. And in her case, but possible romantic relationships with very, very powerful people who she should know not otherwise. I mean, she's literally, you know, investigators believe she's a Russian spy. She pled guilty. You
she
know?
Did the whole thing. She
this
did
is
the
a
thing.
Very
that,
cool story. This story just anymore. Gets cooler.
So I know we want to read the statement, but real quick, have you guys watched the family yet on Netflix?
No, I've got to now because literally all my friends are talking about
love it.
Because everybody in Nashville thinks they know people who are in.
Probably
the real life version of this.
They probably
and
do.
So there's a lot of like, hey, you remember that time we went to that thing? Do you think that's what this was?
Yes.
Hey, do you remember when they all lived in that one house? Do you think that's what that was?
Yes. The answer
is
yes.
Is, I mean, I'm not kidding you. It's conspiracy. Jesse, you've got to come here because it's like conspiracy theory land
right
now.
It. I love
joy.
In all confessions, I've watched the first four of, I haven't seen the last two episodes yet, but you know, I went in with a very preconceived idea of what the documentary was. And especially after the first two episodes, I was very conflicted about how I felt about the central figure in it, Doug Coe, because a lot of his, and Tyler, I'm interested, you know, you've watched the whole thing. Mm-hmm. I'm interested to hear what you think about him, because a lot of it came across as he seemingly had a lot of noble intentions that may have been not preyed upon, but powerful people may have used to achieve their own agendas. But the central figures at the core of it, a lot of them seem like at least they had very pure intention spiritually.
Yeah, I think that, and we've kind of talked about this a little bit offline about there's sort of a mix of things that I think are very valid and very concerning coming out of the documentary, and some things that seem a little bit not intentionally inflated, but maybe a misunderstanding of some very standard evangelical rhetoric about what it means to about being involved in the public sphere as a Christian. I think that there is I think the family kind of like you see a lot of the same thing happening with when people talk about like Donald Trump, say, and the way that he's like crafting this masterful policy for the Russians to take over. And I just don't think that's the case. I think that with regards to the family, it seems like there have been some crimes of negligence, maybe just not being aware of certain people, not having a lot of strict security protocols in place for things like the National Prayer Breakfast that allowed it to be leveraged by people interested in power and in undermining certain democratic processes in the United States. And they've just found the family to be sort of unwilling allies in that without them being aware of it. Now, I think the family occasionally does kind of veer into sort of a dominionist theology that is worth debating. And I think Christians need to be more aware of their own politics in that way. But in terms, I don't think the family has some sort of vast conspiracy to overthrow
of
them.
Because the show is fiction, right? It's not a documentary.
It is documentary. There's fictionalized,
it's documentary. So it's 100% true.
Yeah, there's fictionalized elements that they reenact certain things.
Yeah, a lot of reenactments.
Okay. But it's not.
I can't wait.
In a statement, the organization said about the documentary, though the Netflix docudrama, they refuse to call it a documentary, docudrama, series mischaracterizes the work of the fellowship and attempts to portray people of faith in a bad light, we are encouraged by how often viewers are introduced to and challenged by the person and principles of Jesus, which are at the core of our mission and message. The statement continued, perhaps they will also better understand the integrity and transformational impact of this informal network to encourage everyone in the spirit of friendship and reconciliation to love God with all their heart, soul, and mind, and to love their neighbor as themselves. I mean, the thing, I'm curious what will happen, if anything, to the work of the Fellowship Foundation on Capitol Hill, where they are, you know, prayer meetings, both bipartisan prayer meetings, mm-hmm. led by a Democratic and a Republican senator and congressman. And it really is like to bring together government leaders around prayer and fellowship. And I'm curious now if, you know, if people will be more hesitant to participate or something because they don't want to get like
if there's a little bit of a stink on it.
Yeah. And I'm wondering, and that would be unfortunate, you know.
And I think they could have handled this a little bit better by saying something as simple as, it's true that in the past maybe we've made a mistake here and there in terms of the people that we allowed in and some of the ways that our security was exploited or lack of security was exploited, but I just think there's a little more of a nuance that the documentary itself could have provided so far. And I think that the statement could have said that instead of this kind of this very broad denial of the entire series.
Because like I get the intention of like, yeah, let's have even bad people come. You know, Doug Coe once said, I'm friends with a lot of bad people, you know, because he wants to turn them good. Like that's his whole mission. It's like, well, bad people are going to stay bad unless good people reach out to them. Right. But some of those people have manipulated the, you know, probably pure intentions of the organization to honestly back channel with powerful people. And that's, you know, that's where it gets complicated. But Annie, I think I know your love for conspiracy things. I think you would love the series.
I'm telling you, I'm really in. I mean, yesterday at church, people on staff and people who are just stopping in kept coming into my office and saying, hey, have you watched this yet? And I mean, it is, I've got to watch it because I got to stay culturally relevant in my friend group.
There you go.
It's interesting.
Next time somebody asks you that, be like, come in here and shut the door. Never speak that out loud again. You're like, act like you're kidding.
Are you talking about that?
No, are
you
all
out
I
of
keep
your
saying
mind?
Is,
are listening.
Are you all crazy? I keep saying, like I do with every conspiracy theory, is you're probably right. I just keep saying, you're probably right.
No, they come into your office and talk about it. You're like, good day. And you just get up and walk out and they just look out the window and you're sprinting and they're like, oh no, oh no.
Or they start talking about it. My phone next to me just combusts in front of them.
You've got the lever under your desk that drops the floor out from underneath them. That's like, right. Oh, that's interesting. That's right. Let me get a go. That's
right. Yeah, sure have. Step right over there for me in the corner. Boom.
And Jesse, all I need right now when I'm on a book deadline is one more series to binge. So here we go. I mean, priorities, right?
Enjoy.
I've got an opening in my schedule, so I plan on watching this weekend.
It's very good.
It's only six episodes.
Yeah.
So I need to time it.
Six
where
episodes for that are an hour each, I'm sure. Right? Not longer than that.
40 minutes, 45 to an hour.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I'll knock this out before we see each other again.
So I need to time it, though, that I don't wrap it up post midnight.
No. Because
then
you
I'll
don't
be like,
need to do that.
Oh, now what? And I'll get on Twitter.
You want to watch it after midnight. Otherwise, because you never know. You want the cover of night while you're watching this thing.
All right. Coming in number two this week. Lauren Daigle led spontaneous worship at a concert in Vancouver. She decided to switch up her set list on the fly, saying, I just feel it in the room. She then led the crowd in singing the 1983 worship song, I Exalt Thee by Phil Driscoll. Here's a clip. Remember Phil Driscoll?
Yeah.
Remember Phil Driscoll?
Phil Driscoll was the level of Christian artist that my church could afford every once in a while to bring in for a concert, you know? Yeah, it was a big deal, Phil Driscoll concert, you know? And he would lead worship and he kind of had that raspy, like Tom Cocker voice, you know, or Joe Cocker voice, you know? And then, but he would bust out the trumpet solos all the time. You know what I mean? He's a really prolific trumpeter. And like,
wait, he would sing and play trumpet?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, not at the same time, obviously. Oh, yeah. I'm not being dumb, but I mean,
incredible.
Like, he had a trumpet.
That was the thing. Like, that was his thing. He was like, he was a trumpeter. That was his main thing. Very the singing cool. was secondary, kind of like Louis Armstrong. You know, he's first a trumpeter, second a singer. And I remember like thinking, man, that, I mean, this is a one man band. I mean, this is like, this guy's, you know, prolific. We don't have those kinds of artists anymore. I guess like Lizzo plays the flute, but like what artists are out there singing and then they bust out their.
Yeah. So do I. Yeah.
She's great. She's great.
We need to bring it back.
Yeah.
Like, singers like busting out.
I mean, I played the French horn in middle school, but I don't think I should like preach a sermon and then play the French horn in the middle. That doesn't feel like quite as cool as Lizzo.
I Annie, you're selling yourself a little short there. I think the French horn is the coolest brass instrument, no question. My mom Nancy played the French horn as well, so you're in good company. And she has not busted it out regularly.
My dad played the clarinet in high school band. And that thing cool. like stayed with us. Like I would find it in the attic. Like, why do you have a clarinet? He's like, I don't know. I might like get back into it one day.
Like, you hear him like not? Late at night in the attic, like just the great, the most majestic clarinet solo you've ever heard. Dad? He sneaks up there. Yeah, where you've inherited his restlessness, where he channels it into unbelievable clarinet arrangements. You're on Twitter, but to each his own.
Do you guys remember that era, like 2004, when every white Christian guy became a djembe player? Like that became became a thing. And then they get to go on stage during your church's global week, which just kind of meant like some ill-defined African focus. And instead of getting like,
but he was always 10:40 playing window. In the youth group. He played every week at the youth group. He was only at big church. Yeah,
and then
that
he'd get
Sunday.
Big church. Yeah. The, he'd just go up there and his like in that Hollister knit hat, and he'd just play like, "How great is our God?" And he'd have to very slowly, "How great, but don't boom." Is our God.
Yeah, I exalt thee. Do 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 do. And he's like, "This really isn't a djembe song. It's 10:40 window week, dude. Just stand up there with the djembe.
10:40 window week. We're monsters.
Just rock the djembe." Hearing "I exalt thee," man, it brought me back to those old days.
It's a catapult. You know?
Oh, yeah, it's a time machine. I loved it. Yeah. Yeah.
As the deer. Yeah. That was a good song.
Ancient of Days. I was a big Ancient of Days, guys.
Ba-dum-bum.
Blessing and honor.
Come on.
That's a djembe. That's a djembe jam.
That's a djembe jam.
Ancient of Days still slaps, man.
Speaking of worship music slapping, coming in number one this week, former Hillsong United member and singer Marty Sampson fired back at Skillet's frontman.
He did?
Week.
I don't know this. Tell me everything.
All right. So Marty Sampson went on Instagram and shared his doubts about his faith. We reported that. And then he deleted the post. Okay. And then the Skillet frontman, John Cooper, went on Instagram and wrote a lengthy Facebook post titled, "What in God's name is happening in Christianity?" And he said, "We must stop making worship leaders and thought leaders or influencers or cool people or relevant people," he put that in quotes, "the most influential people in Christendom."
We get it.
Shots fired, Cooper.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Loud and clear.
The post was shared 29,000 times, and Skillet's publicist emailed me about 29,000 times wanting us to cover it. Yeah. He also wrote, "Most shocking, in my opinion, as these influencers disavow their faith. They always end their statements with their new insight or truth that is basically a regurgitation of Jesus's words. It's truly bizarre and ironic. They'll say, 'I'm disavowing my faith, but remember, love people, be generous, forgive others.' Why? Though Samson never was mentioned in the post, many people who shared the post drew a connection between Cooper's words and Samson's announcement. However, Samson never said a lot of things that Cooper put in quotes." Okay, so then in another Instagram post addressed to Cooper, Samson said, "Wow, where do I begin?" Now this has all the tone of a late night Cameron Strang Twitter response. "Wow, where do I begin? I guarantee you this is written at 1 a.m. What right have you to put words in my mouth? I wouldn't presume to put words in yours. To think that this actually is exactly what I tweet in the middle of the night. To think that I am trying to influence others without even asking me if that's my intention is offensive. Did I write an article on myself in Relevant Magazine? I only ever posted about that.
Thank you.
That's true. We're talking to the guy who wrote it.
He's talking about you.
Yeah.
Keep going, Cameron.
I only ever posted about this to explain to people, my 4,000 followers on Insta, I may add, where I was at in an honest and genuine way, not to influence them and their beliefs, not to draw attention to myself. That was our job to draw attention to. Uh-huh, uh-huh. Marty also posted a screenshot of an old relevantmagazine.com article called 7 Prominent Christian Thinkers Who Wrestled with Doubt, with a caption that read, What of Relevant Magazine airing the doubts of far more prominent Christian thinkers than me? Should they have written in this article? Should Mother Teresa have destroyed her personal letters? My opinion is neutral, and the fact that I have never heard of these doubts from these prominent Christian figures only assures me of my own doubts and enlightens me to the danger it poses to the beliefs of the tribe, be it atheist or otherwise. Perhaps this is why most belief systems are ultimately sanctioned by the highest powers of the land and assured of their survival. By doing so, I continue on unabated. There you go.
Okay. All right. Maybe we should just go around the table because I feel like we all probably have something to his point about like only sharing to his 4,000 followers. I mean, listen, if you're if you've written songs, I mean, he's written songs for Delirious, for United, Young and Free, for Hills. If you've written songs that, you know, are sung by millions of people around the world and then, you know, are questioning the truth of them, it is newsworthy. And so, especially if you're posting it in a public platform. But the other thing, too, is like, I do think that Christianity has, modern evangelicalism has a unhealthy relationship with doubt. And I actually was rereading that listicle that we did about prominent Christian thinkers who wrestled with doubt openly. And there was a quote from Charles Spurgeon, the prince of preachers, you know, largely recognized as one of the greatest preachers ever. And this is one of the quotes that we quoted in that story. He said, "I think when a man says, 'I never doubt,' it is quite time for us to doubt him. It is quite time for us to begin to say, 'Ah, poor soul, I'm afraid you are not on the road at all. For if you were, you would see many things in yourself, so much glory in Christ, more than you deserve, that you would be ashamed of yourself, as even to say it is too good to be true.'" Even Spurgeon said, if you say you don't doubt, then we have to doubt, you know, your credibility. Like, right. I'm not saying every doubt needs to be aired publicly, but right. I don't think we should have an adverse relationship with doubt. I think doubt should actually be embraced, because if we truly believe, there's no question too big for God, you know, or his truth, then let's put it all on the table here. Let's say, let's get it out instead of letting it fester and to feel like you're alone on this island. Let's deal with it as a community with grace instead of just making people who actually vocalize their doubts pariahs, you know?
I completely agree.
It's good.
I
want to hear your thoughts, Annie, because you're used to living your faith in public and you have a little more a distance, you know, I can see us getting a little defensive here. So I'd like to hear your thoughts.
I think a very telling stat, I won't even say my thoughts. I'll just say a very telling stat is that Marty deleted his entire Instagram account except for this one response to John Cooper post.
Yeah.
Right. Like even the thing he originally said isn't there anymore. Yeah. And I don't love how this is handled by him, maybe, which I don't even know that I get to have an opinion on how he handles his faith life. But what I also think we all should have a little more grace for people when they decide to wrestle publicly.
Yeah.
Okay. He decided to wrestle with his faith publicly, and that was his choice, and he's going to take backlash compared to those of us who wrestle with it privately.
Yeah.
But I think, so I feel sorry for him and I don't feel sorry for him at the same, like my Enneagram 7 feels sorry for him. My 8 wing is like, buck up, brother. You're the one who put this out in the public.
I feel like he's got to be okay with people having opinions if you're putting an opinion out there and you're a public figure.
Right. It's not like someone took a transcript from his meeting with his pastor and published it.
Yeah.
Mm. Right? Like he did this. Mm. And so if you're going to wrestle publicly, people are going to step into that. And he made the choice to say to all of his 4,000 followers, like it was going to stay in his 4,000 followers that are now 12,000 followers. So you win, son.
Yeah.
If he was going to say it's those 4,000 followers, he had to know it was going to go bigger than that. And every time any of the four of us post, from ourselves or from Relevant, probably, you have to realize that this could spark something that is bigger than what you want it to be.
Yeah.
And if you're not okay with that, take that. Don't post it, for Pete's sake.
Well, I don't know that my observation of, you know, putting myself in the mindset of the 1 a.m. Twitter response. I mean, he wasn't like arguing with everybody who criticized him. He wasn't replying to commenters. It was.
But he did. He went to Lisa Bevere's account and responded to Lisa Bevere reposting John Cooper's words.
Yeah. Oh, well, there you go. That's so my thing is, if I'm him, I could see him taking umbrage with another public Christian musician, you know, putting words in his mouth. I don't think, to me, that I would want to, if I'm the original person, mm-hmm. I would want to set that record straight, lest tens of thousands of people assume what he's saying is my heart. Because you know what I mean? Like, I would want to say, no, I said this and I'm allowed to say it. So his response, I kind of get the knee jerk kind of like, don't put words in my mouth, you know?
If you construed, and I don't know that's necessarily the most natural reading of Cooper's post, but if you construed those quotation marks to mean this is what Samson said, then I would definitely want that cleared up. And that's a fair grievance.
Yeah, maybe, and it could just be sloppy writing on Cooper's part, but that's not an unfair
implication. And it might have been John Cooper kind of saying, okay, fine, Josh Harris did this and Marty Samson did this, and that seems to be a trend. And he's like quoting kind of general themes that are uttered by the people doing this. And if that's the case, fine, you know, but the fact that it just happened like literally the day after Marty's and you know whatever, I get this is very inside baseball, and I'm sure that you know listeners are kind of like, get over it, who cares, this is like, it doesn't matter. I just think it's interesting because, as you said, you know, Annie, those of us, not those of us
anybody,
who have platforms, that's what I'm saying, all of us with social media need to think about what,
right? Remember when that girl said, made a terribly racist joke on her Twitter and nobody knew who she was, and by the time she landed wherever she was flying, she had lost her job and the whole world knew her? I mean, there are none of us that are immune from possibly going viral for something that we say. So we can't, we have to be thoughtful. We can't just do 1 a.m. Twitter rants.
Although those feel really good.
I'm about what John Cooper said. To be fair, I liked John Cooper's response.
See, I honestly took a little bit of issue with it because I feel like, I mean, like, because are you going to criticize Job? Are you going to criticize Thomas? David publicly questioned his faith and published it in Psalms. I mean, he questioned half the book's questioning. Where are you, God? Why did you abandon me?
I feel like John Cooper's writing was way more not people who are questioning their faith, but people who are committed to their faith for a long time and then at some point decide, I am no longer committed to this faith, and now I will announce that. And now I will have as much expertise in this as I did in the 20 years of the faith that I had. I feel like that's the one of the big problems John Cooper had with it is like, you jump into this big announcement so quick, seemingly.
Well, yeah, that is an assumption, isn't it?
Was it an announcement, or is it like just sharing where he's at transparently?
Yeah,
you know what I mean? I don't know that it was like, I had a press release. Hey, the only publicist that contacted us was John Cooper's publicist, okay? Yeah. To like want coverage about his statements. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
That's interesting to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like literally, like, hey, you're talking about Marty Samson, the lead singer of Skillet has responded, Relevant should cover it. And it's like, okay, this feels icky.
And I don't love the idea of a publicist asking us to cover a statement saying we need to stop giving Christian influencers so much power over what we think. There's a little bit of
that. I love that
idea. A little bit of hypocrisy there.
Person who makes career out of selling Christian music criticizes Christians for elevating people who sell Christian music. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, come on. There's some irony here.
He did. He noted that within the post, I believe, but it doesn't change the fact that there is something a little bit, there's a tension there that's kind of difficult.
I agree with that.
But I think that these are important conversations. And I think that if you're going to post something like what Samson posted, then you do need to be willing to engage with them. And you might think that some people are treating you uncharitably. That's almost bound to happen in a social media age. You're going to get feedback that you disagree with or that you feel like is in bad faith with what you actually said or wrote. But that is unfortunately the nature of the beast. And you can prepare for that, and obviously that's something that we think about a lot. All of us have to with the statements that we issue. I don't think it's fair to take umbrage with the fact that people are going to have some very strong emotional reactions to something that you write.
Yeah. Two final thoughts, and we got to wrap this. One, from relevance perspective, if you're like you know, the some of the comments that I was seeing last night about like this, people were, you know, like John's right and Marty's wrong and relevance only highlighting the negative view and they're ignoring John. And it's like, and then people are saying like, well, that's because relevance lukewarm and this, that, whatever. To Jesse's point, like being honest about wrestling with doubt is a part of the Christian experience and part of our spiritual lives and journeys. And if you don't at some point, you're fooling yourself. But as a brand, our heart is to emphasize the positive. We want to draw people closer to Jesus. We are pro-church. We are pro. And so while, you know, there's two ways to enact change, you know, I mean, you could like point out what's wrong with everything and criticize it, or you can kind of turn your back to it and uphold a better vision of how things could be or should be. And that's always been our perspective, right? We don't want to be negative. We don't want to be cynical. We don't want to be critical. We want to be hopeful and optimistic and point people to the Lord. And tomorrow's a new day and things can get better. And as in our faith life, we emphasize 99% of the time spiritual disciplines and prayer and worship and things that are going to move you closer to the heart of God. But in that conversation, we do talk about doubt from time to time too, because this is part of it.
Yeah.
We don't emphasize it. If you look at our coverage, it's 99% pro-Jesus and 1% questions. You know what I mean? So I feel like the misrepresentation isn't fair. Okay, that's one. The one last thing I want to mention just from relevance perspective of like, why did y'all even cover it? You know, who cares, right? Why did you even, whatever? Jesse illuminated this as well. And I would just want to highlight it. We've given our platform to Hillsong United. We put them on the cover 3 times in our magazine. And we feel that if a songwriter who has written many of the songs we've sung in our churches is now openly talking about, I don't know that I believe any of this anymore, we feel a journalistic responsibility to share that information with you. You know what I mean? Like, we've told you one side of it. Oh, this is going to be helpful for you to understand the full context of the people behind that thing. We don't want to fluff people. We don't want to put them on pillars or pedestals. They're humans too. We've told you the good. Here's the other side. There it is. We're not trying to bash anybody. We're not trying to like sensationalize. We just felt like a responsibility. Like if we ignored it, I think people would rightly criticize us for ignoring it, you know? So it's like, we just felt like, hey, this is what he said. He's been on the pages of our magazine. Do with it what you will.
Yeah.
We didn't draw a conclusion. We just told you that it existed.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
We will continue to do that. We will continue to do that. We're not looking to rile up dirt or slander anybody, but like, hey, if we've promoted someone, we feel an obligation to tell you the full story if other information comes out in a future time. So we're sorry, but that's part of being a media platform. Anyway, moving on. That'll do it for
It's the Hot List, the Hot List. It's sizzling.
Between Jay-Z, the family, and this is one of the hottest hot lists we've had.
This is a hot list. This is a hot show. Let's call it. This is a hot show. Cameron came in hot.
Yeah.
He got me all mad the hot about episode. The Twitter.
And let's be honest, John Foreman's hot.
We're just getting started.
Hey, you know what, though? You know what, though? The only reason we wanted to have John on today, he's got a famous dad.
He does have a very wonderful dad.
Pastor Mark Foreman. John wouldn't. John, you know.
He hasn't done much on his own accord, but it's good he has a famous dad.
Yeah, we really just, it's all about nepotism. That's really all it is.
You know what? 2 years ago when I started on the show, I would never jump in on these long making fun of the same commenter.
Now look at you.
Jokes. And now y'all have just ruined my pure heart. And now I play along the whole time.
This is how it starts.
This is how it starts. This is how it ends. This is the end of me.
Annie, you have no idea how low the basement is.
Welcome to the dark.
Stay tuned. Up next, John Foreman joins us. Listening to Shade, the song is Thunder. Well, today's show is brought to you by Bombas. Bombas is a comfort-focused sock and apparel brand with a mission to help those in need. One purchase equals one donated. Bombas not only look great, they're also made with an emphasis on style and comfort. They are super soft, made from natural cotton, and every pair comes with arch support, a seamless toe, and a cushioned footbed that's comfy but not too thick. They're also a perfect purchase during back-to-school season. Bombas exists to help support the homeless community and to bring awareness to an under-publicized problem in the U.S. And so far, more than 24 million items have been donated to those in need through their motto, which gives away an item for every item sold. Bombas is my absolute favorite sock. Whenever I'm traveling, I always pack the Bombas because when you're on an airplane, these are the ones you want to wear. I'm telling you right now. You can buy your Bombas at bombas.com/relevant and get 20% off your first purchase. It's a great deal. That's bombas.com/relevant for 20% off your first purchase. Trust me, you'll love it. Well, John Foreman is a Grammy-winning singer, songwriter, and the frontman of the band Switchfoot. This week, he penned a powerful op-ed for relevantmagazine.com about the American gun violence epidemic and the need for Christians to approach the issue with boldness and love. So we wanted to have John on the show today to discuss it with us. Here's John Foreman.
This week, you know, John wrote an incredible piece for us about the gun violence epidemic that's happening in the country in response to some of these just horrific shootings that the country's experienced really in recent days. And, you know, the piece really focused on the need for Christians to approach the issue with boldness, but also with love. John, I want to get started with you, man. You know, obviously, you are incredibly emotionally transparent, and that really comes across in the piece. What was it about, you know, kind of the things that happened in the country in the last week or so that really struck a chord with you that you wanted to address them?
Well, I think it's not just me, but I think we're all kind of becoming desensitized to these mass shootings. And it feels somehow strangely normal, and that's a horrible feeling. And I want to kind of throw myself out of that situation. I feel like the frog is in the you know, in the glass, and the water's heating up, and I want to be aware of it, and I want to be shocked every time. I don't want that to become normalized.
Do you think that, John, this is Tyler, you posted a video message where you said that whenever you post, when you write something like this, you're used to getting attacked from sort of both sides. You take criticism from the right and from the left over what you're saying. What do you think it is about your message, this message in particular, that is kind of that is upsetting to people on all sides of the gun control / mass shooting debate?
Well, I think gun control is certainly a hot topic, but I don't think it's just gun control. I think that our society is becoming increasingly binary, where we, you're either red or blue, you're black or white, you're liberal, you're conservative. And that is, rather than being the beginning of the conversation, that's the conversation ender. We're done. We disagree. And I feel like that is the most dangerous thing about these times, is that that's essentially silencing any future conversation. And that's where a lot of times these young men are finding the voice of a gun to be as horrible as it sounds. In their minds, that's the best way forward. And I feel like when we silence our enemies and no longer speak to them with kindness, with the idea that there's a piece of humanity in them but also in me, we're doing the same thing that the gunshots are doing. It's stopping the conversation rather than starting it. And so for me, I think the awareness of looking at someone else and saying, wow, that's a human. I find a piece of myself in that other human. Maybe that's a place to start. I know that I'm sure between all of us on this call, we're going to have differences. We could focus on all the different ways that we disagree, because I'm sure there's a million of them. Or we could begin on the things that we agree about. Do we want a safe place for our kids to grow up? Yes. Do we want to make sure that that schools are safe, that these shootings, that we find a way forward? Yeah, I'm sure. So for me, I think that it becomes this thing where it's not just about the guns. It's about the idea that the conversation has stopped, and that is the most dangerous position for a country to be in.
I want to read a quick passage from the piece and have you unpack it a little, if that's okay. That, you know, kind of it expresses those thoughts. You know, you wrote, love is so much easier than hatred. I'm sorry. Love is so much harder than hatred. It's messy. It's uncomfortable. It takes time and intentionality, and it doesn't often get elected. But love continues the dialogue when logic fails. A gun can bring silence, but only compassion can bring transformation. Violence can destroy your enemies, but only love can turn a foe into a friend. Those are such powerful words. On a practical level, how can we go about expressing love in an environment that is often, like you were saying, so contentious and so polarizing? What are some ways that, you know, we can make ideological enemies, quote unquote, you know, how can we turn them into our friends?
Well, I think two things. I think the platform upon which you use to have dialogue is a part of it. The method is the message. And I'm questioning whether Twitter is the best way to dialogue about these things.
Yeah,
yeah, I do. I wonder that too sometimes.
So you're saying 1 a.m. Twitter arguments are not a good idea?
I'm saying, yeah, they might not be the best place to truly transform somebody's mind.
Interesting.
I think that most of the time when we're spouting off words of frustration and anger and sometimes hatred online, that's mostly for us rather than trying to actually honor the other person at the other end of the line. And I question whether if that person, I'm a big fan of coffee, and I feel like if maybe there's a practical way that we can begin to take people that we disagree with out to coffee. Years ago, we were having a bunch of people from the Westboro Baptist organization. I think that's the one. They were following us around and protesting and saying horrible things about us and the people that listen to our music. And it was just a really awful scene. But I had this idea that if I could take them out to coffee, we could actually have a dialogue. And it ended up working wonderfully. We went out to coffee with a couple of them, and I feel like it was a step towards understanding each other and respecting each other. And I think respect and honor have to be a part of the equation when we're going to make any sort of headway in any form of dialogue, you know. And I feel like I read an amazing piece by Andrew WK about this guy who's really trying to come to terms with his dad having different beliefs than he does. It's worth a read. It's in the Village Voice, but he basically says similar thing where if you are turning this person into the enemy, if you're objectifying them in such a way that you can no longer see their merit as a human soul, then the conversation is dead before it starts.
Do you think there's a difference? I've been thinking about this a lot since I read the piece, John, and I really admire a lot of it. I also think that there is maybe a sense, and I want to hear if you agree, and you do touch on this in the piece a little bit, in which it's easier for somebody like me
to start a dialogue with, say, somebody who has maybe some white nationalist sympathies, than a friend of mine who is black and who might actually feel like their humanity and possibly their safety is on the line if they were to meet with these people one-on-one. Do you think that there's any truth to that, or that there is some way, places and times in which that conversation that you're talking about starting might be harder than others and put more of the weight on some of us?
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, I think we're all going to have areas of influence, you know, I'm going to have a voice that's going to be different than yours, but I do think that, like, postmodern world is radically different than anything that any epoch of humanity has ever experienced. So the idea that a community for thousands and thousands of years has meant the people that you live near, in the New Testament talk about neighbor, I certainly think that our neighbor is around the world. Now we're talking to people online around the world, but in a practical level, I'm going to be having coffee with the same guy at the same coffee shop or next to him a lot, or my neighbor is literally the guy next door to me, you know? And these areas are places where I think we can go further than potentially, the online argument. And for me, I think like the respect thing, it can't be a feigned, I'm going to try to respect you even though I hate you kind of thing. I think it has to be this element saying, I really am going to, I'm going to bring my full attention to you and I'm going to listen. And that is the way that listening, that openness can suddenly, then you're able to have a voice into that person's life. Because I think about like the things that have truly transformed me, the times that I've been transformed, it's never been someone's brilliant argument that tears me down. It's always some form of love, you know? And I think love transcends where reason doesn't. The irony is that every single one of us is wrong at this very moment in our views. We just don't know which views are wrong and where, like every one of us. And the only way we're going to learn that we're wrong is by communicating with somebody else, seeing a different perspective. If we could bring that amount of mindfulness and attention to the other in the conversation, I think that kind of respect elicits a response where I'm listening too. I feel heard, you know?
Yeah. John, we appreciate your voice and your wisdom on this topic. And I appreciate you speaking out, man. I know it's not an easy thing to talk about and it's controversial, but your voice means a lot to us and a lot to, and I hope people take it to heart. So thanks for making time for Relevant.
Thank you for having me and have a wonderful day.
Thanks, John. Thanks
for the conversation, the dialogue. We're going to be all right. We're going to be all right.
Well, that was John Foreman. Make sure to check out the op-ed he wrote for us over at relevantmagazine.com. Also, Jesse, I don't appreciate you booking a guest who makes me feel convicted about my 1 a.m. Twitter arguing.
That was not
literally
planned.
Could that have been any more convicting?
I saw these tweets happening last night.
Mostly.
And I said, you know who we need to weigh in on this? We need to get John Foreman on the line.
I feel super convicted.
I'm in on his perspective on guns. I'm in. I'm not convicted about that. I agree with him. I didn't think he was going to take me to task saying, well, you're an idiot if you think you're going to change anybody's mind by arguing with
this
him.
This is the hot episode and we're coming in. Everyone's
really
coming in
is.
Hot.
This has been a real
the
journey.
Hottest Friday of the year. That's true in every sense of the word.
All right. Stay tuned. Up next, it's Ask the Cast. You're a mistake that I need to keep from choking.
I like to think the church is a haven for the hurting, but what happens when it's not? The passion behind the Me Too and Church Too movements show no signs of relenting. As more stories of abuse and secrecy within the church unfold, it's clear that this is not yesterday's problem or a Hollywood problem. This is our problem, and survivors are speaking up. author and advocate Mary DeMuth is using her voice to dare the church to listen. DeMuth's new book, We Too, unpacks the church's historical response to sexual violence and provides a healthy framework for a new way forward. We Too urges the church to become what it should be, a place of security instead of shame. We all know someone affected by sexual abuse. It's time to listen, act, and help find the road to healing. Visit WeTooBook.com for information and resources. That's WeTooBook.com.
You're listening to Verite. The song is Ocean. Okay, it's time for...
If you got something you want to know, now's the time to ask. It's Ask the Cast.
Ask the Cast. You guys went on Twitter. This is why I got in trouble last night, because you guys actually hit us up at Relevant Podcast on Twitter and asked the cast questions. And I joked back about a couple of them as the Relevant Podcast. And
now he's saying joked now that John Foreman laid down some truth.
No, I really did.
A lighthearted joke.
A lighthearted reply.
I was mostly just kidding.
Obviously kidding.
It went weirdly personal and aggressive. And then I'm not standing for that. And the whole Ask the Cast thing went sideways. So we're going to pick our favorite lighthearted dumb questions that you guys sent us and lob them to the team. Number one, why does Relevant only promote women who have famous fathers?
Yeah. Annie, do you want to take this one?
It's a huge honor to Tom Downs. He's the best dad.
I am offended at that, and I'm going to have my dad arrest you and drag you.
Okay. Let's see. D asked, I'm in day five of a 10-day class for a doctoral program at a seminary. What can I do to spice it up a little?
You can get your doctorate in 10 days?
Yeah.
You've got bigger problems. Oh, we need to come back.
Time out. I hate to tell you this.
Doctorate in what?
I don't know how legit this 10-day doctoral program is.
Yeah.
I don't know what you... Yeah, I don't know how to get to spice it up other than, this may just be one of those, like, is this like an online program to get ordained to, like, officiate a wedding? The details here are throwing me off too much to, I think, answer the question.
It'll get plenty spiced up when you have to call your lawyer because you realize that you didn't actually get your doctorate.
You didn't have to actually get a doctorate.
I didn't know Trump University had a seminary department.
Speaking of Trump University, you could just do what Trump spiritual advisor Paula White did.
Yeah, just add doctorate.
She didn't get a degree from a college or a seminary, but for some reason in the past few years has started calling herself Dr. Paula White.
You're lying to me.
Online.
She's introduced at all White. These events, and they're like, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Paula White. And you're like, wait a minute.
I don't know. All this time.
So maybe you don't even need to do the 10-day class. You just start all using the term doctor.
Owies.
Who's going to check? I mean, go for it.
That's really being your best self.
Yeah. You're speaking it into existence. That's part of her theology.
It's like dressing for the job that you want, not the job you have.
That's it. She's dressing for the title that she wants, not the one she actually earned.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Brendan asks, help my wife and I settle this debate, please. Mm-hmm. When drying dishes that you've washed by hand.
Yeah.
Drying dishes you wash by hand. What is the optimum way of letting them air dry? Is the glass upside down or right side up?
I have a take.
Oh.
Right. I got a take.
But wait, we got to go around the horn. Does everybody have the answer?
Yes. I do know my answer. Yeah,
absolutely. I know my answer. I have a follow-up question to my answer before I can answer.
Sure.
Do you have one of those rubber pad things that has the little water channels in it? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like if you have a one that's going to raise it.
Does that change your answer based on whether you have that or not?
100%. I have that, I'm upside down because then the drops can drain down. If I don't have that, I'm right side up. But the problem
I'm
with
always
right
always upside down.
But if you're flat on the surface, you could be locking moisture underneath that glass, which could get gross. You know what I'm saying? So you need to have one of those.
What's
mats.
Your vote?
Oh, upside down.
Upside down for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mine is not hand drying, and mine's whatever way it'll fit in the cabinet the easiest. Because here's the thing. The great thing about water, it dries. And it's remarkable how you just put a glass in there and not worry about it. Whatever's the least work, do that. No way your hand drying. Just slam it in the kid, just jam it in the cabinet and don't even worry about it. That's what I do. So, you know, I don't even know why she's asking, to be honest with you. It seems very intuitive. All right. My life's too valuable to spend time hand washing a dish for a substance.
If you think that's right side up, isn't the residual water going to pool at the bottom and then the next time you go to fish it out?
What a rich guy thing to say. My life is too busy to hand wash my own dishes.
Yeah. Annie, I have far too much. And guess what? If when I pour my coffee in the morning, it tastes like a little dishwasher soap got left in there, just jolts the system much more. It's fine. It is fine. I've got important things to do, like watch the last couple episodes of The Family while I get mad at people on Twitter. Annie.
Lydia asks, I'm going on a quick, spontaneous camping trip with some friends. Any advice on making it an unforgettable couple of days?
Oh,
yeah,
Jesse, I feel like this is your time to shine.
Yeah. This one is a softball. She was teeing that one up for old Jesse
Carey. Right up down the middle. Let's unpack what she's asking. Okay, she said make it an unforgettable couple days. She didn't say enjoyable.
She didn't say good.
She didn't say good.
I heard her. I heard her.
She said unforgettable. I'll tell you what. Don't pack any gear. Right? Go totally gearless. This is, I mean, you should wear clothes, but it's essentially a naked and afraid situation where you need to go out into the most dangerous wilderness you can find with no supplies and try to make it out alive in 3 days. I guarantee you, you will not forget the outcome of that trip. This is easy. This is easy, Lydia. Just no knife, no matches, no cell phone, no flare. Your job is to make it out alive. It'll be a weekend you'll never forget.
You're saying you go full naked and afraid for this,
right?
Just absolutely diving. All right.
This is a all right.
Jeremy asks, what's your favorite guilty pleasure movie?
Great question.
Guilty pleasures are a young man's game. I feel like I felt guilty about things when I was like in my late teens and I had to impress
you're
people.
Like it's not cool enough.
Yeah. I wasn't cool enough. Like I had to things think about, you don't want your mom to know you watch.
I was just
going to
play.
But
remember, we're talking to someone.
No.
We're talking to a grown
my famous
man.
Parents needed to know.
Listen, we're talking to a grown man who has a comic book podcast. So when you say guilty pleasure,
got a huge
also
collection
one of my favorite
right
podcasts
here.
To listen to be clear. Cape Town is
thank you,
the
Annie.
Business.
Thank you,
I love
Annie,
that show.
My real
but
fan.
I'm not even a comic book person.
So I don't feel guilty about much that I watch anymore. I kind of like embrace it.
Yeah, you make a good point. I didn't think about that. Like when you're younger, and you're trying to fit in, be cool, or be a tastemaker, whatever. Like, it limits what you're allowed to tell people you enjoy, right? But now that you're as comfortable in your own skin, you don't care about what other people think. You don't have guilty pleasures anymore. You just enjoy what you enjoy.
Okay,
that's interesting.
I got an example. I almost feel like, so here's the thing. I know I need to finish The Family. Like I feel like I somewhat almost have like a professional obligation to, right. Like I need to be, somewhat sure. well-versed, but I'm scrolling Netflix. And I'm like, Olympus Has Fallen. Is this the one where Gerard Butler rescues President Jamie Foxx? Like, I gotta see it. Like, I feel like that's more of the guilty pleasure thing. Or if like Step Brothers happens to be on Comedy Central one night, it's I'm watching this. Question. I don't care what the plans were, but I should be edifying my mind with high culture and documentaries that are really gonna make me more well versed. But if the bunk bed scene is on, I'm watching. I'm watching Step Brothers. Yeah. Annie, what's your guilty pleasure?
I am more processing Huck's guilty pleasures are a young man's game idea.
Yeah.
Cause I'm like, well, I mean, if you've got males on TV, I'm stopping and watching the whole thing, but I don't feel guilty about that.
Annie, me too. And I don't feel one bit of guilt. I love
Cameron,
you got mail.
We
got
to watch it sometime. It's just so special. Start
it's one. It's one of the best movies. It's
one
great.
Of the best movies.
No matter when it's on, it's great.
Exactly. Like, I don't care where it is in the movie. I'm in.
To Jesse's point, like, there's a lot of stuff that I know I should watch, but I'm not really in the mood to watch that.
Yeah.
I'm always in the mood. If I see you've got mail, I'm going to click it. No question.
Maybe that would be a little more, if I felt guilty at anything, it'd be about how many times I've watched some of these movies. Like, that's a little more like, I sit down, it's Netflix
the cumulative
night,
time
pull
you've
it up,
used.
And, it's and it's like, well, there's a lot of new stuff out there, but Black Panther is still on Netflix.
And
that's only been out for like a year and a half. And
that's a comic book guy.
I've already seen it. Like, something like that could maybe be, that could be closer.
Yeah. Jordan asked, do y'all eat your mac and cheese with a fork or a spoon?
Allergic to dairy. Womp.
What? I didn't know that.
Lactose intolerant.
Is that why you got sick the night before the Christmas party?
Yep.
We went to that milk. We went to a milk bar, and someone got late night
milk bar. Yeah.
This question has really brought up a lot more than it intended to. I think you learned so much.
I mean, whatever's closest. Again, I am about minimal effort. I don't have. Listen, when you got a schedule like mine, I don't have the time to go rooting through the silverware drawer. Whatever's on the table, I'm using. I'll use, you know, I'll fold it up a piece of cardboard if I need to. I maximum time use, people.
Jorge says, my downstairs neighbor used to leave trash bags outside their door and would make the entryway smell. Now they just leave a trash can outside. How do I make them be normal?
Super gross.
That's a problem.
You tell your HOA. I usually just tattle to my HOA problem. Instead of dealing You're with the problem. You're the tattler.
I like it. I'm with you. I'm with you on the tattle.
Now, I'm going to say this. Tattle. You guys are the worst. someone who's been tattled on to numerous HOAs.
I believe that. I believe that you've been tattled on.
I mean, the modern...
There's right and wrong. They are wrong, and I need to confidentially
knock on my door, talk to me like a human. No.
I'm not going to confront you. Because I might tweet you at 1 a.m.
I'll
but
double
I ain't
down.
Confront you.
I'll pay the fine. I'll double down, and I have before. I will double down. No, what I've observed is the modern contemporary way to deal with these situation is not to actually just talk to your neighbor and ask them to move it, which seems like the obvious solution. It's to go on the Next Door app that all your neighbors are reading anyway. And passive aggressively shame them to the rest of the neighborhood. I see that happen all the time these days.
Ray says, "What's the meanest thing you've done to someone?"
Oh, really?
Ouch.
Are we going to do this?
One time I had this jerk who got all uptight because I rented a dumpster for 2 months and left it out front.
Just put my trash in it. It wasn't even construction trash, just life trash.
It was a season of cleaning hoarder style. And instead of coming to me and telling my problems, I got some tattletales, and I don't know who on the cul-de-sac said something. So the whole cul-de-sac got trash in the yard. So how do you like that?
You know, this calls to mind, this is a sad story. Somebody told me a story that somebody else had brought up this question as like an icebreaker for the group. Like, what's the meanest thing you'd ever done to somebody? And this person was in this group when this happened. And a woman who was there, the story she chose to tell was the time that she accidentally hit somebody with her car and they died.
What?
You can't just bring up, like, this is supposed to be a fun, icebreaker situation. But instead, she brought up vehicular homicide was her mean thing.
Because she said,
I was not the person.
It's like, I've been meaning to get this off my chest for a while. So, since you asked, here you go. This is old fashioned.
But I wonder
if
that's one of those things you carry. This is going to be too serious for a hot Friday. I wonder if that's one of those things you carry that you sometimes put out there in front of people just because. You're like, I just need to tell you this thing and see if you'll still be my friend.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, just, I think that's right. I can't think. I don't know what the meanest thing ever. I can't think. Like, I'm sure.
I have gallows humor. And so if something's really bad or uncomfortable, enjoy leading out with actually. It. Like when I met Shauna Nyquist at an airport in Vancouver at the baggage claim, she comes up. She's like, hey, you're going to this thing too? Yeah. Oh, hey. And we meet. And she's like, how are you? And I was like, oh, my wife just left me. I guess I'm getting a divorce. And she just, her jaw drops.
And then just kidding. No, but seriously, I did hit. I think I really injured someone on the way to the airport.
Oh my God.
But then we became best friends.
Your unedited interview with her was so good, by the way, Cameron.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, thanks. Yeah,
yeah. That's a great conversation.
She's really good.
She's a good person. But we became best friends because we just broke the ice that way. I'm with you, Annie. It's like you throw the meatball out there and you see if they pick it up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's right.
I'm going for it.
The famous idiom, throw the meatball out to see if it's picked up.
I feel like you said meatball earlier Benjamin this Franklin. Week, too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a Benjamin Franklin, isn't it?
That was David in Psalms, right? Throw the meatball out thine area.
Katie asks, long time listener, first time tweeter. Well, welcome. Don't tweet after 1 a.m., Katie. I'll just give you a little advice. Breaking Bad or The Wire? She asked. Breaking Bad or The Wire?
Breaking Bad.
Close. Haven't watched either.
That's a really good question.
What?
Oh, because of the dairy thing. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm allergic to dairy.
I'm a dairy. I'm allergic to dairy and gratuitous violence.
Yeah.
I mean, someone is dismembered in the first three episodes of Breaking Bad. I like Breaking Bad. I feel like the characters, I feel like the arc of the... Okay. The Wire is great for micro issues, like looking at the criminal justice system, looking at drug and corruptions, and it gets you to understand, the journalist that spent years covering actual crime in Baltimore provided a lot of insight for issues that are facing that show. So if you're looking for that, go with that. If you're looking for a broader narrative arc about the human condition, I think Breaking Bad's better.
The Wire for me, it's what season? Because The Wire for me was so groundbreaking when it was made, and it the storytelling holds up, but the cinematography doesn't. And so watching it now, stuff has gotten so much better, just artistically. Yeah. And it's just like, it's not as groundbreaking now as it was then. And Breaking Bad didn't know what it was the first two seasons. It's like the first season of Seinfeld, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. It didn't know what it was. And then it became...
Yeah,
one of the best, if not the best show of all time. So it's an interesting, both have their pros and cons, you know?
Wait, can I ask a listener question?
Yeah.
Seinfeld or The Office?
For me, Seinfeld.
Yeah.
No question. It was such a genre creating type of...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the Beatles. I mean, to me, it's like the comedic Beatles. It's just like so many things came from it that wouldn't have happened otherwise.
And there's no sentimentality in it. The lesson we started this before, but like they made a deal, no lessons, no hugs, no one changes, no one gets better. There's no, everything's played as a joke. When one of the characters' fiance dies, tragically, it's a joke. The Office, there's tears and stuff. So if you're looking for sentimentality, I think The Office, but if you're just looking for pure comedy, you got to go Seinfeld.
Yeah.
I'll be the minority party on this one. I think I'd go with The Office personally. I think Carell's performance is one of a kind, is extremely unique and really, really good. And I think it feels a little more human. I think it's kind of the inverse of what you're saying, Jesse. And it depends on what you're probably looking for out of it. But yeah. I do like those human moments that they bring in. I think they're handled really well for at least the first five seasons. So I'd say The Office. That's a good question, though. You can learn a lot about somebody.
All right. Lexi asks, last question. Lexi asks, I'm leading a small group at my university this year. What are some good icebreakers to get everyone comfortable?
We got you, girl. Listen to the last 20 minutes of the show.
Yeah, we need you to come up with some questions, you're saying.
All right, guys. Hey, nice to meet everyone. We're going to start with secret sins. Secret sins. Rick, let's start with you. What are you hiding, pal? Yeah, let's clear the air.
We're going to end with this one, actually. John asked, and this is really sweet. John asked, how can we be praying for the cast members?
Oh, that is nice. Thank you, John. I appreciate that.
Are we going to tell the truth in our answers?
Well, he was replying to a tweet that I deleted.
Oh, boy.
Where our listeners always so mean to me.
where I shared some personal news, and John was like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry, man. Hey, by the way, how can we be praying for the cast members? So that was his question.
I'm having a really hard time writing a book that's due in about 10 weeks. So praying for the right words really matters to me that I find the right words for this one. So
do you carry the weight? Like, to me, with work and deadlines, because obviously we have deadlines all the time. And once we pass one, there's another one looming. It's not sitting down and doing the work that's difficult. It's when you're not, it weighs on you knowing that you need to be doing it. And as the deadline gets closer, the weight gets heavier. And it makes it, for some reason, harder to just sit down and do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you find that?
Yeah, I just want it to, I feel like it's not a cop-out answer to say pray for my work versus like a personal thing. Because when I'm writing a book, it is a personal thing. This is my life right now, is trying to do this well. So that's what I would love for him to pray.
I don't think I've told the podcast this yet, but we're gearing up for a temporary move. My wife and I are getting ready for a short relocation over to France as part of her master's program that she's working on. There's obviously a lot of things to get ready for in the meantime for that. And it's a pretty stressful move, and moving overseas is actually kind of difficult. I had no idea. So could definitely use your prayers for the stress of that and making sure we get all the visa stuff taken care of and figure out how to make sure that our house has been taken care of over here. I'd really appreciate that.
Are you doing the Titanic type thing where you're taking like big trunks of things?
That was in retrospect kind of a mistake, probably.
We packed up all the gold coins in three
pirate chests.
are you serious? Are you doing that?
No, we're using our I got one piece of new luggage that's coming in handy, and it's going to be kind of a slow, we're going to be moving out of suitcases for a little bit now.
I would just say, I mean, just on like a personal front, like for the last year, I think, been kind of my whole family, just trying to like reevaluate the way that, you know, we spend our time and what we invest in kind of relationally and, you know, how seriously we take our faith and our relationship with God and what he means to us and our family. And I think just like that continued sort of like conviction to make that a priority, and to make that the centerpiece, is always a challenge, especially when you got a lot going on in life. It's easy to kind of just put, you know, stuff that should be important into kind of coast mode. And so I think just maintaining a healthy perspective and a balance in life is a constant prayer, and one that I think, I would always really appreciate people praying for.
Absolutely. For me, there's been a lot of challenges this year. I mean, work has had some unexpected curveballs, and even like right now, while we're seeing a lot of positive turnaround on the horizon, things happening, that's good. We're very shorthanded, so work is really stressful, and there's a lot on everybody's plates, and you just kind of feel that weight, you know. So just for resources and guidance and direction and provision and all the things at work, you know, personal side, some people or a person very close to me is struggling with a significant health issue and just carrying that weight and navigating pretty scary waters in that area. So just, you know, while you're up at 2 a.m, just on Twitter sometimes, you know. Oh, man. All right. Well, thanks for asking that, John. That was really sweet. Well, thanks for everybody who sent in questions. We do this every week now, it seems like. You can hit us up on Twitter at Relevant Podcast if you want your questions answered. But just be warned, if you ask stupid questions that have some sort of agenda.
Cameron might get you in the middle of the night.
Some sort of agenda where you're trying to belittle people I care about, then I'm going to take you down. All right. Thanks to Bombas for making this episode possible. Remember, buy your Bombas socks at bombas.com/relevant and get 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/relevant for 20% off your first purchase at Bombas. Also, thanks to John Foreman for joining us. Make sure to follow him on Twitter at John Foreman. He won't argue with you in the middle of the night. It's a very good follow. Also, make sure to read his op-ed that he wrote about gun violence at relevantmagazine.com. Well, on that note, we'll wrap things up. I'm Cameron Strang.
I'm Clark Flippo.
I'm Jesse Carey.
I'm Tyler Huckabee.
And I'm Annie F. Downs.
And pray for Chandler's family, since he's apparently dead.
That's
tragic.
You are Chandler's family.
Whoever they might be. Somebody's got to call it. What's his last name? Somebody should call them and make sure he's all right.
All right, we'll see you all on Tuesday. Have a great weekend, everyone.
For listening to the Relevant Podcast. If you like what you heard, be sure to leave us a review on iTunes. Check out other shows from the Relevant Podcast Network in the podcast section at relevantmagazine.com. And while you're there, browse exclusive podcast merchandise at our online store. Make sure to subscribe to Relevant Magazine. Info is available at relevantmagazine.com/subscribe.
I don't know who on the cul-de-sac said something, so the whole cul-de-sac got trash in the yard.
Relevant Podcast Network.